Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. And as always, every week, I'm joined by one of the wonderful team of the EV Cafe. This week, of course, no exception, JC in the house.
Seriously buzzing for today. Can I just say that right up front?
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah.
Why? Have you got something to do afterwards?
No, this is very much about a long history of loving Fully Charged as it was.
And don't keep giving it away.
Well, I know, but I'm excited.
Well, and on that note, we of course get to talk to some wonderful innovators, pioneers and collaborators in our business. And this man is the personification of this. Innovator, pioneer and collaborator, the wonderful Dan Caesar, CEO of the wonderful Fully Charged. Welcome, Dan.
Hello, how are you? What a welcome. I can't live up to that, surely.
Probably not, but, you know, we'll start well.
Good to see you guys.
Dan, it's really exciting to have you on, and not least because obviously you're leading one of the most pioneering YouTube sites in our sector, really, and it's so much more than a YouTube site now, right? It's a complete organization. Talk us through a little bit about the journey of Fully Charged from YouTube channel really to what it is today, and paint a little picture for us, because we want to get into you as well, but paint a little picture for us of the key area of focus.
Well, it's been an incredible journey. I first met Robert Llewellyn in 2016. I started working on Fully Charged then. He'd been working on it for 6 years already, and he'd been pouring his own investment into it. He was just fascinated by the energy transition. You know, really good communicator about electric vehicles and clean energy. And I'd been in the space for a long time, and I kind of stumbled across Fully Charged. And I thought, finally, someone's done it. Someone's created something where we can talk direct to consumers. So we have a business audience as well, but our focus, as you know, is on the consumer audience around the world. And at that point, you know, he was sort of funneling his own money into it. Wasn't quite sure how he could, you know, grow it, or, you know, whether it has a financial future. And that's when we met really a couple of guys who were really passionate about the shift towards electrification, and actually not really car guys per se, ironically, just really into what the electric car meant, electric vehicles meant, and all the surrounding technologies. And at that point, I sort of said, well, I can give you a helping hand. And then sort of spooling forward to now, I can't quite believe where we are now, because obviously 2024 always sounds so futuristic in my mind. I thought I'd be really, you know, retiring by this time, but it's an incredible time. But probably the big moment for us was in 2017, when we decided to take it beyond YouTube and actually introduce Robert and the other presenters and all the technologies to people in kind of live events. So that really was a big moment, a transformative moment. And that was 7 years ago we announced that. 6 years ago we did our first event at Silverstone, and now we run exhibitions around the world. And that's enabled us to sort of grow into a sort of genuine business, I think. And, you know, from our perspective, we love doing it. We love getting out there. And, you know, it's amazing to see the progress. When we first did our Silverstone show in 2018, there were about 10 cars to choose from. I'm sure, John, I'm sure, Paul, you can rename what those 10 cars were. Now there are hundreds, literally hundreds, and obviously we're struggling to catalogue those and keep up. But we are passionate about vans. I'm going to mention vans straight away, commercial vehicles, passionate about smaller micromobility, obviously very passionate about home energy and clean energy as well. And so, yeah, it's very odd, very surreal for me to think about where we've come from. And I'm very excited, Dan, about the next few years as well.
Tell us about you. Robert Llewellyn, TV star, stage and screen. And Dan Caesar, you didn't just jump into this role as the force behind this change without an awful lot of experience. What have you done in the past?
Well, yeah, it's interesting, really, because I was used to running my own businesses for quite a long time. And I really enjoyed coming in to work with Robert because he was obviously the face of it. And compared to him, I'm like sort of nobody. And I quite enjoyed that anonymity, actually. But
that didn't last.
It did last. But I actually, believe it or not, I'm actually really, really happy that we've got an Imogen and a Jack and an Elliot and a Ricky and a Robert. And occasionally I sort of poke my head out from under a rock, and that's fine, I think. So, you know, people know who I am. But really, from my perspective, I've been in the industry for quite a long time. So I first started to work in the heating industry in 2003. And I was working for the Gas Safety Watchdog. It's such a boring story, this boring origin story. But within like weeks of me being in that role as the director of communications, the Gas Safety Watchdog, I sort of fell in love with heat pumps. This is the big joke. So Paul's got his vans, I have heat pumps. Fell in love with solar PV, solar thermal, things like that. And then I worked in a number of different areas, you know, doing communications, doing events, yeah, all that sort of thing in that space. So I worked in solar, I worked in energy storage, I worked in heat pumps. I consulted for the Department of Energy and Climate Change for a while. I was building energy saving homes in the Home Building and Renovating Show well over a decade ago. I ran my own business called the Renewables Road Show. I worked on fuel cells even, you know, so I'd have quite a diverse background, but I was just super passionate about getting people into better technology.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And it's interesting though, Dan, because I mean, you're CEO and you've got a really good presence, a really strong, positive presence around the show. And you know, your background doesn't sort of go towards that sort of you're quite forthright, aren't you? Is forthright a fair word? Particularly on LinkedIn. I mean, you can get a little bit shouty.
Yeah, no, it's that is fair. Robert and I, you know, both have that. I mean, I think that, you know, occasionally we would get someone saying, I can't believe what someone's just said to me from the Fully Charged team on YouTube comments. And we go, yeah, that was actually Robert. Robert and I used to be very, very vocal on Twitter as well. We've come off that. I'm still on LinkedIn, still kind of rabble rousing and kind of being forthright, shouty, obnoxious, whatever word you want to kind of use. Certainly, there's a little bit less of that these days from us, but we are totally independent. You know, I think that I've worked for lots of companies where you have to mind your P's and Q's because, you know, there are other stakeholders. We are in a kind of incredible position where we have, you know, the ability to speak a bit more freely. We see so much nonsense out there that we feel like we're quite well equipped to push back against that. Yeah. So I'm mellowing a bit, Paul, but you know, the reality is that you'll see it on every platform, right? It's absolute abject nonsense. And, you know, from my point of view, I think we live in a world where you do need to call out the BS because there's just so much of it. It surprises me how much there is on LinkedIn. Actually, I'm really, really surprised because I really like that platform. I know you do as well. It's fantastic. There's still plenty of people on there who are kind of, you know, putting forth the misinformation. So, yeah, I am mellowing. I am calming down. But certainly, from our point of view, we feel that other people can't probably thinking what we're saying, but they just can't say it.
I think it's important, isn't it? I mean, I do it a little bit in the van world. Being an independent trader like Mr. Trotter, I haven't got my own van yet, but I will do. But the you have to be, there's that tight line, isn't there, between independence and kind of calling people out. But I think when you're as strong a platform as you guys are and have a stronger voice, you have the freedom, because there's a lot of time where I want to call out the BS from the mainstream manufacturers. And it's something that's characterized for me, the Fully Charged shows, is that what we see is the pioneers, the innovators coming, and sometimes the laggards appear, in some cases, to be the mainstream manufacturers. Is that something that you're seeing? Are you finding any opportunity to cut through into that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hesitating, and I'm hedging slightly, and you can see that in my face, I'm sure. I mean, I think the reality is that this is a time unlike any other for these manufacturers. Cuts across, you know, commercial vehicles and passenger cars, of course. And you know, I've met some amazing people who work in the car industry, and I think as individuals, often, you know, people are minded to try and make a better world, and they're minded to, you know, push this sort of better tech. You know, and we see electric vehicles of all shapes and sizes as just simply better than the conventional vehicles that have come before them. But as a mass, companies, you know, that corporate structure, when people herd as individuals into a company, they're not so well behaved as a group. And from our perspective, we've seen some phenomenal things. You know, BYD and Tesla are the talk of the town at the moment, and rightly so, because of the volumes of cars that they are making and selling. Then there's a whole other cohort of companies who are really, really serious, really, really super progressive, and are also doing quite well. But your ability to manufacture is quite important, right? You know, it's all very well being able to make a nice car, but actually ability to manufacture and sell those vehicles and get them out there is obviously going to be the key determinant of who has the most market share, not who has the nicest looking vehicles. There are plenty of other progressive manufacturers out there who are probably, I would say, have got brilliant vehicles, probably as good as or almost as good as the Model 3 and the Model Y, certainly as good as the Seal or the Dolphin, but maybe don't have the ability or maybe the desire to manufacture in such high volumes. And then you have another group which are kind of, you know, dipping their toe in the water, and there's a couple of other manufacturers who are, you know, still have their heads very much in the sand. So it is interesting to watch, and we have, I guess, an unusual relationship in that we would talk to the PR people at these companies when they want to appear on the Fully Charged show. Then we would talk to the marketing people when we want them to appear at our live events. And we have this kind of relationship with the companies, which is really, really interesting. And I would say there are plenty of companies at the moment who are on the surface talking a really, really good game about their electric vehicles, but below that aren't quite as committed to selling them in high volume. So there's a real tension there, and I've just written a blog about it. I haven't put it out yet. Maybe the time this is released I will have done, but I do not have the ability, the aptitude, or the patience to work for a car company. I think it must be an incredibly difficult market to work in at the moment, and you know, fundamentally the winners are going to be those who can make the most, right?
And the difficult bit for you, you mentioned that tension, Dan. You're absolutely right. I was sitting here listening to you thinking mainstream manufacturers are the ones who are still burning stuff. And you brilliantly have brought this stop burning stuff tagline to the whole industry. And that is really to your credit. But by the same token, the people who are burning stuff and still creating those internal combustion engine vehicles are the very same people, broadly, who you seek to gain investment from for your shows. And I guess what you're doing is you're recognizing that we live in the real world and that we have to transition from where we are to where we want to be. And the only way to do that is to have very strong messaging that says we need to stop burning stuff. We need to do it by a certain date so that we can keep the global warming to 1.5 degrees. Does it frustrate you sometimes that you can't be as forthright as perhaps your instincts tell you? Because you know, I know, that in an ideal world, petrol and diesel would be gone tomorrow. If we had the technology in the rollout, but we don't. Is it tough to be that pragmatic and have to say, well, we'll take the dirty pounds?
Well, I think, you know, I think there's that's a brilliant question, to be honest, and one I'm very, very happy to talk about. I mean, on one end of the spectrum, you have an organization like Just Stop Oil, for example, who will say and do anything to stop, you know, fossil fuels. You then have someone like, Greta Thunberg, who obviously has done incredible things, you know, in terms of raising climate up the agenda. I actually am as passionate about climate as probably she is or they are. But what we found typically, if we talk about climate and we talk about air pollution, a large percentage of people switch off. And so I think there is a pragmatism. Equally, you know, you know our shtick. Our shtick is if we switch now to electric vehicles, and we have exactly the same number of cars and vans out there than we have now, then we've probably failed within this switch. Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. But akin to that, there is a pragmatism. When the pandemic came along, everyone could see the benefit of, you know, less road pollution, less air pollution, people jumping on their bikes, you know, walking around, all the rest of it. But as soon as that receded, car culture kicked back in again. Mm-hmm. You have to be pragmatic. We can reduce the number of cars, but culture is the hardest thing, hardest needle to move of all.
Absolutely.
And therefore, you have to work within the confines of what you've got. And the confines of what you've got are electric vehicles are much cleaner than the conventional combustion vehicle. So there does come an element of pragmatism. Should those cars be smaller? Absolutely. Should they be lighter, more efficient? Absolutely. Should we be moving into a position where some of those vehicles are shared? Absolutely. Should there be less vehicles on the road? Of course. But the reality is that you have to work within the pragmatic confines of the marketplace. You can't be all sort of rainbows and unicorns. It doesn't work that way. And I think, you know, I actually have huge admiration for Greta Thunberg, huge, but she's obviously in a position where she can make her particular point and long may she continue to do so. Just Stop Oil has been a little bit harder. So when we raised our head above the parapet with Stop Burning Stuff, a few people said, are you going to be like just Stop Oil? We said, well, no, we're actually out there to, you know, to get the facts across. Just Stop Oil is a really, really interesting campaign. And I've actually found, have some sympathy for what they're doing. Mm. But there is a real issue, I think, in them disadvantaging and putting out, you know, the average person by blocking roads and things like that. You know, if you really want to go for the jugular, I think you should go for the super rich and the people who are in the, you know, oil and gas industry, not maybe inconveniencing people on the street. So I respect what they are doing, but equally, if you hear Just Stop Oil on the radio, they don't actually know what the solutions are often, which can be really, really frustrating. You know, well, Just Stop Oil, if you're going to stop this, you know, what are you going to do instead?
And often they listen to them
slightly embarrassed because they don't actually really know the answer. So maybe I'm just getting old and pragmatic. from my point of view, you know, we would much rather have all the car companies in the tent where possible, being part of it, because then they can meet these amazing people, these pioneers and early adopters, and then they can hopefully be enthused by them. And then, you know, someone from a big corporation that has made most of its money out of fossil fuel can come to one of our shows, for example, and go, I met, you know, hundreds, thousands of beaming EV drivers who are super happy, and they can go back into their, you know, their corporations. So actually, there's a market here, and this is a great thing to be doing. So I do think it is worth having them in. It is difficult. Some of our relationships are better than others, you know, because we still continue to be pretty, pretty candid. And I'm pretty sure there's a couple of companies who would never spend any money with us ever because we've been very, very forthright about some, let's say, some slightly disingenuous marketing taglines.
Indeed.
Mm,
thank you.
Absolutely. Do you know what, Dan, you've touched on it a few times. It's a little bit about mindset. So we, you know, we start talking about air pollution, people turn off, you know, give them a lovely car to drive. Actually, they get out smiling and their mind has been changed by that experience. And it sort of leads me to think, because obviously on the EV Cafe podcast, we want to know a little bit about Dan Caesar and this mindset that you have, the passion, the focus on climate, the resilience, the determination, almost like, you know, you're willing to get in the ring with people in the sense, you know, metaphorically. Where did that all come from? How did Dan Caesar begin? You know, thinking back to school, what, you know, what did you want to be when you grew up? What forged Dan Caesar?
This could go one of two ways. This could go to full counselling or, you know,
good
answer. I mean, I don't know really. I mean, I think from my standpoint, you know, I'm really into, you know, justice, I suppose, social justice, you know, climate justice, all those sorts of things. When I first left education and moved into work, I started working in publishing, and I found it really interesting, but ultimately a little bit soulless, because I didn't belong to a particular industry and it didn't really have any meaning. And when I moved into the gas safety watchdog, actually that was all about saving lives and helping people understand that carbon monoxide poisoning was a thing. And then a little light went on in me to say, actually that's a purpose, you know, gave me some purpose. And I guess quite early on, I sort of latched onto the fact that I was concerned about, you know, climate related issues. I was concerned about air pollution, very, very much so. You know, that's the kind of the thing that gets me up. You know, moving more metal is not the sort of thing that gets me up, actually, ironically, but actually making a bit of a difference does sort of get me up. So, yeah, I'm very, very driven. I see it as fundamentally very, very important. I don't know quite why. I was just always a bit quite environmentally kind of motivated, I think. And, you know, that was well before I had kids. And as soon as you have kids, if anyone has them, you know, then you kick into a different gear entirely, which is protect, isn't it? You know, and what kind of world are they going to inherit? So, yeah, I'm sort of, you know, fiercely kind of protective of you know, what we're doing. And also I do see that there are other parts of the world that are much, much, much more affected than we are. You know, as we talk, we're just coming out the back of some quite serious flooding in the UK, which is not to be sniffed at. But, you know, we all know that actually there's been some horrific, you know, climate-related instances in around the world over recent years. And that's, I think, going to get quite bad. You know, I really, really do. You know, I study it very, very closely. But it is, you know, people want to, I guess, not to overthink about these things all the time, not let it dominate them. And they will like good tech, right? Because it's, you know, it's escapism. Like you like film and TV because it's escapism, or whatever your escapism is. But the reality is that, you know, really, really good technology is a great way of starting to have this discussion.
Yeah. We were talking to Indiver Singh, and Indiver Singh is the CEO founder of a company called EVAge. They're an Indian vehicle manufacturer. You might have seen their stand at the London EV show, and I saw you wandering around briefly. But when we were talking to him on a podcast, we asked him, you know, what is the... We were talking about the emissions in India in particular, because, of course, we all think India are our biggest emitter in the world and all that sort of stuff. But actually, per head of capita, they're not as big. But what he did say was that London has a measure on some scale or another of 3 or 4 on the CO2 kind of monitor, the air quality monitor. He said on the same day, a good day in Delhi was 896. And he said that children are being born with lungs 20% smaller because they don't have the right air quality to just form, you know, in the thing. And it's that thing, and along with, you know, Ella's law going through Parliament at the moment around the right to air quality. And I get it. I know that it doesn't engage necessarily the masses, but it is definitely a motivator, isn't it? Do you know what board was it your kids, was it family? But I mean, it seems like it was a lot before. What brought that compassion in you for, or that awareness? What brought it to the surface?
Well, you know, honestly, you know, when you are meeting the victims of carbon monoxide poisoning, and often you're meeting the parents, kids that have sadly died, and things like that. So I was in like all party parliamentary gas safety groups. You know, we we talked there was one family who lost a youngster on a holiday resort overseas due to carbon monoxide poisoning. And I have to say, I'm ashamed to say that at that point in my kind of mid to late 20s, I hadn't really given air pollution and what we breathe a great deal of thought. And I think that really, really sort of struck me at that point. Carbon monoxide was the area that I kind of looked at. And then I got in, you know, then start talking about carbon dioxide and all the other things that are in the air, and the fact that we can actually do all that we need to do in terms of, you know, heating and powering things without combustion. Clearly a kind of a switch flicked in me that these are the right technologies to promote. We did a Fully Charged Live, as well as Everything Electric Now in Vancouver in September. And I hosted an incredible panel that was on induction cooking, believe it or not. And it was one of my favorite panels that I had done. But we had a fantastic chef and proprietor of an Indian restaurant in Vancouver, and they cook everything on induction. And she was kind of extolling the virtues of how good the food tastes. And then we had an indoor air specialist as well, a doctor, who said effectively, whenever you're cooking in your house, not just the gas you might be using, but also what's coming off the food actually can be poisonous. And I hadn't really given that lots and lots of thought. And it was a real moment. So, you know, it's invisible, right? You know, everything we breathe in is invisible. But everything that we do, you know, all the gases we produce, that they are avoidable, you know, through combustion-free technology. So I guess probably that moment when I spent time with, you know, victims of carbon monoxide poisoning, and just it's a senseless loss of life, isn't it? You know, and I thought, actually, well, you know, if you can use, you know, heat pumps or, you know, solar and batteries and electric vehicles, that's got to be a better way. So it took a while for me, really, but once I kind of, you know, once I saw that firsthand, it's hard not to have that kind of stick in your mind forever. You know, you mentioned the poor young girl who died as a result in South London. And we know all around the world, all the time, people's lives are being, you know, shortened, you know, as a result of poor air pollution, and often in the poorest parts of, you know, in the country, in the world, when they're living next to a ring road, for example. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think for me it is important. But as a channel, as two channels, the Fully Charged and Everything Electric show, we try and lean into that. We try and drag people in with how cool the tech is, in the hope that we change their minds that way. That seems to be, I think, the way that you can get the most people to make a change.
Yeah,
Dan, I remember the first time I met you being completely awestruck by you personally, and I mean this genuinely. I was really, really lucky to meet Robert 2010, and knew of the work that he did. And then I met you at the London EV show, I think, for the very first time, and I was extremely nervous at coming forward. And I was there with, you know, the other guys. I had safety around me, but you're somebody who's like an icon almost. And you speak about being that backroom boy and, you know, not so upfront and one of the presenters. But here you are, an inspiration to people. You don't get to be an inspiration without having tough days. You've had some tough times in your life where everything hasn't been golden and hasn't been rosy. You present a brilliant, what's the word, face for the organisation. But underneath all of that, underpinning that is experience, and some of that experience is tough. Can you talk to us about a time when things haven't been so good for you? And you've had to really pull yourself up by the bootstraps to be the man that you are today?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the honest truth is the way I look at it is we're all standing on the shoulders of Robert Llewellyn for the Fully Charged show first and foremost. You know, he came up with the concept, he invested in the idea, he's built it. I'm very, very happy to acknowledge that, you know, I and the others that I've worked with have taken it to another level. With Robert's good graciousness, he's been so good to me, to let me get on with it, and to the team. And we now have a fantastic team. So, you know, I'm for me, if it wasn't me doing it, it'd be someone else. But I'm very, very happy to be part of it. in terms of kind of the harder times, I have to say, John, I'm not going to disappoint you. I will give you an example, but I have had a very lucky life, you know, and we all pray for that, of course. But I've been very, very fortunate in my life not to have had any major hardship. Now, of course, you're very unlikely to go through a life without any hardship at all. But, you know, I think that I do obviously, you know, feel certainly compassion towards other people I've seen go through a lot of things. I think for me, one of the reasons I'm quite driven is that we actually, Joe, my other half, who works on the Fully Charged show, and I now, we actually started a business back in 2008, I think, called the Renewables Roadshow. And we were even back then, so what's that, 15, 16 years ago, we were running events all around the UK, touring heat pumps, solar, all those good things. And we were doing so because at that time there were government incentives, things like the feed-in tariff, renewable heat incentive. Some of you might remember the lovely Green Deal and so on and so forth. And we actually built up quite a sizable business at that point. And then if you do remember, David Cameron sort of came in at one point and declared all that to be green crap. And that materially affected our business. We sold that business, and actually it lasted another couple of years. But actually, without, you know, your government policy, how important is it, right? It's incredibly important. We live in a country where at the moment we're feeling the effects of there being a bit of a vacuum in that respect. Yeah. So that had quite a big effect on me, because that actually was the first time I think I'd been in a business where I'd built something up to be quite successful. And it had, I suppose, you know, I can say it out loud, it failed ultimately. And, you know, that really kind of sharpens your desire. And from my perspective, you know, I've really, really enjoyed it. But that was a much tougher time. I, you know, it's a bit like you guys know what it's like. You know, you go from, I had a great job, I then went out to run my own company, I then had to kind of sell that, I then go back into, you know, contracting for Department of Energy and Climate Change, or for working for other companies, or being a consultant. And that's obviously much, much harder when you're doing the consultancy. I know Mr. Kirby, for example, you know, it's great to do the consultancy work, isn't it? But you also constantly got to win the work as well as doing the work. It's a tough gig. So that was a bit of an eye opener, I say. That was a bit of a tougher time where you do start doubting yourself. You know, there's no question about it. You know, you do find that harder. But I guess that experience sort of, you know, was good ultimately. I like to think everything that happens, you can turn it into a positive if you try.
How do you get yourself back from that? You know, when you get into a bit of a negative thinking space, how do you, you talked about escapism. What's your way back using escapism, using techniques you've learned to bounce again? Because you always do. We always do. You know, we've all had those things. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was just very, very lucky in that at the time that was going on, I had, you know, young kids, you know, so, you know, we can't really afford to rest on your laurels or, you know, to feel too sorry for yourself. I was also absolutely stonewall, 100% convinced that electric vehicles and clean energy will win. There was never any doubt. So that was always actually quite a nice kind of point of reference for me. It was always, you know, the sort of North Star. I know these technologies are going to win. It's just a matter of when. So a combination of, you know, having, you know, a young family and doing those things, obviously like anyone, have an outside interest. But I mean, it's fair to say that over the last, I would say 15, 20 years, I've been very, very focused in work and long, long hours, you know, to do what we do, long, long hours, you know. And if you've got to have that mission and that belief to do what you guys do, to do what we do, you've got to have that. And, you know, yeah, that purpose is fantastic. I'm very, very fortunate to be in that position.
And Dan, naturally leads to say, what as you stand today, what are you most proud of?
Well, I think really, you know, I think if we had a pound for every person who, you know, switched to an electric vehicle or bought an electric bike or got solar panels or, you know, bought a home battery or heat pump, whatever, you know, Robert and I would be, you know, much wealthier than we are. And let's not be bitter about that, you know, but, But I know, I think that that does make me, you know, that does make me very, very happy to know that. I think it is. I think it genuinely, we in the show notes for our exhibitions last year, you know, I did write, I think apart from Elon Musk, I can't think of anyone, when I talk about Robert, who's inspired more of those sorts of purchases. I mean, clearly there have been great figures, right? You know, right through this industry, but you know, the amount of people who bought their first Nissan Leaf, or, you know, if they're really unlucky, Mitsubishi iMiEV because of Robert, the person who bought the first Tesla Model S or Tesla Model 3, you know, that it is very humbling, I have to say. And that's fantastic. So I think it's that cumulative effect, Paul, that I would say is the thing that I'm kind of proudest of.
And do you ever tire of people coming up to you and saying, do you know, I bought my first X, Y, or Z, which sounds like a lineup of the model Tesla models, but yeah.
I'm very, very lucky because every so often we go to one of our shows and people come up to me and say that sort of stuff, and then for the rest of the year I'm entirely invisible. So I love that. that's really, really nice because when you connect with people who watch the channel, it gives you another, you know, level of enthusiasm. Mm. And you remember, you know, how much of an impact it has had and what's going on in the wider world. But yeah, generally speaking, what I really love is going to any other setting and I'm not known. Robert, for example, I mean, oh my God, the amount of times I've been out and about with Robert and people start shouting Crichton-related things or Scrap Heap Challenge, whatever. I don't know how he deals with it, to be completely honest. So I'm very happy. But connecting with the audience has been amazing because I think the thing for us is that, you know, you do all the YouTube stuff, like you're putting out 4 bits of content a week and you're putting it out into the void. And you obviously, you know, never read the comments, but, you know, clearly you do occasionally read the comments. But the reality is actually doing the live events for us was just amazing because it just gave us the opportunity to connect with our audience face to face every few months. And you know, that the audience liked that. They like to test drive the vehicles. It's not now about seeing them on YouTube, they're desktop researching them on YouTube, then they're going to buy them at the live events, you know, test ride bikes, to ask questions, et cetera, et cetera. So that was just an amazing experience and gives us that energy. We do an event, we take a great deal of energy from the people in the room, and then we get back on, go back into the studio and start shooting stuff and putting out content. But no, it has been an amazing thing to work. I mean, it has been extraordinarily tiring. I have to say, but if you spoke to me in December, I probably would have been like weeping, but I've had a couple of weeks off. So we did 5 events and awards event last year, you know, around the world, plus 200 plus episodes, plus other stuff as well. So that's brutal. Pretty big output for what is about 35 people. It's not a huge mega call.
Everything electric. Talk to us about that because you've gone through this change, this metamorphosis into everything electric for 2024 with more live events, with us working collaboratively, which I absolutely love, and putting things together to make that happen. Tell us about everything electric. What's it all about?
Yeah, well, we're really excited about that. So we have, you know, 3 brands now under the Fully Charged Show Limited, which is the company. Fully Charged Show needs less introduction. Obviously, that's 2 episodes a week. That focuses on YouTube. That is, that focuses on vehicles. Now we have actually moved all our energy content to the secondary channel, which is Everything Electric Show, also on YouTube. And that's covering, you know, home energy, clean energy, and other stuff besides. So we wanted to be clearer, I think, with our audience where content sits. You know, if you've dabbled with YouTube, you know, it can be great. But at the same time, when you go onto a YouTube channel, how do you find the content that's there? We've got 1,000 episodes. You know, how do you kind of surface that stuff? So you need to be clearer. So we've been through that process. I've been particularly involved over the last 3 or 4 years in making sure that home energy is a bigger part of what we do. The way we look at it is that, you know, actually that whole ecosystem now, the car and the home can be joined by a cable. And we also think vehicle, bi-directional technology is going to make a huge difference in the distant future as well. So we've been kind of expanding and opening our horizons. We've got the Stop Burning Stuff anti-misinformation campaign fronted by Quentin Wilson we're running as well. So we've got those 3 distinct brands, John. But what we were doing with our live events, by calling them Fully Charged Live, is we're leaning very heavily on our existing audience. And we were finding it a little bit harder to break into new audiences. If you know Fully Charged, you know it. And if you don't, you don't. And that's the reality. Also, a lot of people pigeonhole Fully Charged as cars only. And mm-hmm. everything electric is supposed to be, well, what it says on the tin. It's obviously a little bit of a play on electrify everything, which is quite a common statement you might hear in the industry. My statement is more like electrify almost everything. I think there are roles for hydrogen and other things, but I think we can electrify almost everything. But you know, from my point of view, we wanted to get across that it's everything electric in under one roof. So all of our live events next year with Sydney, which probably we'll be doing about the time this podcast comes out, and Everything Electric London, which comes up at the end of March, will be the first of our Fully Charged Live shows that go under that new brand. And it's already had a big impact, actually, us moving that under that brand. So our existing audience will come because they know it's Robert on stage and Jack and Imogen and so on and so forth. It's the same great content. But also, particularly when we're going into the London show, we're going to XL London at the end of March, you're also trying to cater to this early mainstream. And therefore, you have to be a bit more Ron Seal, to use a very English phrase. You have to be a bit more obvious what it does on the tin with people. And Fully Charged doesn't necessarily mean anything to people in London who've never seen the channel. So we found that's already had a big positive impact for us. We booked all our outdoor campaigns for London under Everything Electric, bringing the home much more centrally into it. The London show will have more home energy tech than any of our shows have had to date. Loads and loads of cars and commercial vehicles and you know, micromobility as well. But also it started to bring in other companies. Like, we've had quite a lot of inquiries this year from more like appliance companies who have highly efficient appliances, for example. You might have seen that we have been doing something called the Zero Carbon Kitchen at our events in recent times, which is you know plant-based cooking demonstrations powered by, well, last time out it was a Hyundai Ioniq 5. That's really, really popular. It's just new ways, really, I think, to you know, get these early mainstream people in. What we're seeing is really, really fascinating. We have an audience of people who have EVs. About 55% of our audience have EVs, and we have an audience of people, about 45%, who are clearly going to get one very, very soon. And that's what makes us unique. But we want to be dragging in new people each time.
Absolutely.
And when you look at that classic marketing adopter curve, you know, us having ownership, if you like, of the EV owner is great because they're going to buy another EV. We know 9 out of 10 are going to buy another EV. So they're a safe bet. But then that next group is really, really key as well. And they're desktop researching, as I said, on YouTube. And then they're coming to the show to buy, which is why we think we can run probably about 30,000 test drives in the UK this year, because that's such a big part of converting people into electric. So bringing that new cohort in. But you know, you've seen that graph which goes, you know, pioneer, early adopter, early mainstream, late mainstream, laggard, and we are absolutely fascinated about that because we think there's zero point in spending any money on the laggards or the late mainstream. It's just absolutely pointless at this point. Some people who will not be parted from their combustion engine vehicle, you know, over my dead body, will I buy an electric vehicle? So mass marketing on that group is really, really wasting your money at this point.
Indeed.
So it really is about that early mainstream. And even that early mainstream, is there's an early mainstream and there's a late early mainstream. And what we, I think, are quite good at is identifying new ways to get that early mainstream to bring them into the show. So Everything Electric London is coming up soon, and we're really looking forward to bringing that together. But yeah, it's really interesting already how well that's been received. And when we announced that about a year ago, people were instantly, "Oh, I get it." So that was good. That was a relief.
We got it. Yeah. we did. And but do you know what? I didn't fully get it until just then.
Yeah.
And of course I get it, but you know, so people go out and research a telly, right? And we've been long looking at the sort of E, F, you know, A, B, C ratings of the efficiency of energy. And we saw, I mean, that message has been around for a long, long time, right? 8, 9, 10, 20, maybe years. I don't know. I can't remember how long it's been. But it's sort of ingrained that I now start to think, well, actually, I don't want an EF kind of thing. I want a BC. I might pay for the extra for an A, you know, if it's marginal. So I'm beginning to understand that. But I suppose that is a great place to, if you're saying everything electric and it's all about efficiency and it's all about getting the best and the most effective, there's a lot of people there that say, I don't want an electric car, but do you know what? I'm curious about this heat pump business, or I'm curious about cooking with induction hobs, or I might go along to that. Oh, and look at that car. Blimmin' heck, electric cars have come along since the iMEV or the Leaf. And, you know, they might be electricians. They might be plumbers. They might wander into the commercial vehicle zone and see a few vans that look, wow, that looks like a van. Like it should look, like it carries stuff and I can put things in it. And wow, there's even trucks going. How on earth has that happened?
Are you saying that A-rated TV is like a gateway drug into electric vans?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. but this is the thing, isn't it? The A-rated TV goes in the back of a great big diesel truck at the moment. But that's changing. And this is, you know, and the plumbers and the tech, you know, all of those guys. So I really, it's for the, I can see how that ecosystem really draws people. It's a really clever idea.
Yeah, I've had a track record, and Robert has as well, of coming up with stuff quite early. So I was doing, as I mentioned, the Renewables Roadshow in 2008. Robert was doing Fully Charged in 2010, you know, Fully Charged, a YouTube channel presented by a 55-year-old man about electric vehicles in 2010, didn't make a whole lot of sense, but it was extremely prescient. So, you know, it's about seeing around the corner, seeing what's ahead. And sometimes you're coming up with a concept like Zero Carbon Kitchen, like Home Energy Advice Team. You know, we have lots of these different concepts within our events that initially people go, well, yeah, that sounds interesting, but I'm not quite sure I get it. And then sometimes we have to show people, Paul, quite often we have to show people the first one or the second one to do that. Like we recently did, and you were there, we recently did the Fully Charged Awards in Amsterdam. And I'm very, very open. We have to show people the first one so they can then get excited about how that grows. So I've been way too brave, risky in my life, but I always like to do that and think, if I can come up with a concept, we can show people. So we're confident with everything electric, we can do that. More typically, we think the car will be the gateway drug to the heat pump, it does definitely happen in the other direction. If you look at the UK last year, 315,000 pure electric vehicles were sold. So that's non-commercial, I think that's passenger cars. So that's about 26,500 a month. You then had 190,000 solar systems added in the UK, which is the highest number since the feed-in tariff ended in 2011, when it just went over 200,000. We had about 40,000 heat pumps installed, which is progress, although it's pathetically small versus what's going on in Europe. And I would say, just quickly on the heat pump, there's an amazing grant on heat pumps, £7,500 on the installation, just in case everyone's not aware of that. If the government sure aren't promoting it, they'll either be the first ones to go, there's lack of uptake here, but they're not actually. that's a tangent. But, you know, you can see there are tens of thousands or low hundreds of thousands of people buying into this tech. So it's very much at that pioneer, early adopter stage, the energy stuff. The car stuff is just now in the early mainstream. But if you imagine that only 26,500 people are buying electric car each and every month in the UK, that is quite a small number relative to the total amount of cars out there. And as we all know at the moment in the UK, because lots of signals have been sent, you know, plug-in car grants been pulled, the ZEV mandate has been diluted, et cetera, et cetera. We know that the UK battery electric vehicle market at the moment is being propped up by fleet. We know that. And, you know, hopefully there'll be a political moment soon that means that people will get on the front foot with, you know, some incentives around electric vehicles. I know the SMMT, ironically, the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders now, are really campaigning hard for reinstalling some of those things. So All that tech is related, though. We've seen so many people, they buy the electric car, then the first thing they've got to do is work out how they charge it. So that, you know, if they're lucky enough to have a driveway, that means they've got to get a domestic charger. If not, they've got to work out their other charging opportunities. Then they've naturally turned to their energy tariff, you know, to make sure that they're, you know, getting the best cost for their electricity for charging their car. And then invariably it opens up their eyes and they become that little bit more open-minded to solar PV or to heat pumps. Mm-hmm. We've seen it time and time and time again. The only shame at the moment is it's still something that's for the relatively affluent. And so you have maybe there'll be 300,000 electric vehicle car sales again this year. You know, our YouTube channel regularly gets about 3 million views a month, of which about a third are in the UK. So a million people a million views every month are from the UK on our channel. Probably some people are watching every episode, others are watching one or two. But those are the people who I think are going on to buy heat pumps. They're going on to buy electric vehicles. Mm. And they're the ones that are coming to Everything Electric and London and other shows to sort of, you know, they've done their desktop research. Now they want to ask about the heat pump and they want to drive the car. And also the test drive thing is amazing, because at the moment you could literally, we have a new chief commercial officer, and he came in, he said he tried to buy an EV recently. He's getting one. But he went to do 5 different test drives and it took him like 8 weeks. By the time they'd lined up all the different test drives on weekends, by the time they test drove the 5th one, they'd forgotten what the first car was like. So, you know, for us to be able to say to people, come down and test drive 3 or 4 or 5 cars in one go is really, really powerful as well. So I do think, you know, without wishing to sound, you know, conceited, I do think we are making a little bit of a difference. And the whole thing then, John, as well, with everything electric, is let's get EV Cafe involved. Let's get Electroheads, or a YouTube channel we work with, the microbes. Let's get everyone electric involved in that as well. And that's what we're trying to create, I think, is those conditions where everyone says, well, this could be the meeting place that helps us all kind of, you know, that was it, rising tide lifts all boats, basically, all electric boats.
That's brilliant. What a wonderful exposition of everything electric at the Excel, the ecosystem. I've got lots of E's in there.
Yeah,
but it is fantastic. And I think the best E that for me personifies this whole thing is
E's are good. E's are good. E's are good.
Oh dear. Is experience, because people, it's experience that is changing the mindset in my mind. You know, I think once people get into electric vehicles, once people drive, whether it be an electric scooter, an electric bike, you know, and it's not that normal scootering and normal cycling should be dismissed, because of course they remain them, but it takes cycling from a pastime and an exercise thing to something that can get you from A to B relatively easily, relatively cheaply and effectively. You experience all of these changes. Same with commercial vehicles, but you know, people can test drive the vans, I know, this year, and we're going to be doing that. And that's, that for me is what makes the difference. Dan, ultimately that's going to be a great event, and there's been lots of things that have been achieved over this period, but how will people describe Dan Caesar in 50 years' time?
Well, I think they will have forgotten me, which will be fine by me, to be honest. I mean, the reality is that, you know, I very much hope that fully charged and everything electric has a life well beyond the 2030s, well beyond that. And I think that's really, really possible, because I do believe people's relationship with energy is going to change. You know, in the old days, the boiler sits in the corner. We never think about it until it stops producing hot water or it stops heating the house. You know, the electricity system and the pylons deliver electricity, and we never think about it until there's a power cut. I do think this new world is much more engaged. You know, you can see on your app where your energy is going. You can see your car regenning, you know, which is always, you know, very, very addictive. I do think that there's lots of different electrification of heat options which are going to come through. You know, the gamification of energy, as I say, vehicle to grid, vehicle to load, whatever, you know, vehicle to X, all that sort of stuff, I think is going to be interesting. So I do think that potentially there's actually quite a long tail to what we're doing in actually sort of propelling these new technologies. And I think also that there's loads more to come, right? I mean, you just have to look at battery chemistries. progression in the last 2 or 3 years to go. This is you know, there's a lot more coming here. So yeah, from my perspective, I don't really give a fig about having a legacy. I'll leave that to egotists like Robert Llewellyn, you know. But from my perspective, if fully charged and everything electric could, you know, could continue well into the 30s and 40s, that would make me really, really happy.
I have to say, I'm mildly curious. There's been a lot of I want to stay in the background. I don't mind about my legacy. I don't want to be remembered. We spoke about counselling at the beginning of this. I'm wondering if there's something going on here, just being, you know, putting my Dr. Kirby hat on, you know. But anyway,
it's really interesting. We, you know, you spend a lot of time with Robert. He's quite well known, and he's just such a nice guy. You know, he's just a really, really normal guy. And we laugh about it because, you know, we. Talking to someone about some TV related stuff the other day, and you know, to them Robert's not famous at all. You know, there's fame, and then there's you know, there's super fame, and Robert's quite well known. Scrap Heap Challenge, Red Dwarf, you know, and Natalie, Fully Charged. But it's all, you know, it all makes me laugh, really. I'd be quite happy to I really love the industry. I really, really love it. But I'm quite happy. I actually, do you know what? I really like doing podcasts because it's just conversations, isn't it, with mates. You know, it's good. It's good fun. Mm. And I like doing the on-stage stuff. And when we were doing filming for episodes, the story was that we had a great presenter who did a how to get into EVs introductory series with us. We did it about 4 years ago. And I kind of scripted it and she took it and made it her own. And then we got to the end of that. We said, would you like to do a home energy series? And she said, no, I'm not. Not, I'm not interested in it. We said, well, okay, you kind of need to be interested in it because otherwise it will come across, right? So at that point, my background was such, I said to Robert, look, we need to start home editing. I'll do it, but I've got no intention really of being a presenter in the long term. And that was partly true. I was quite interested to see how it would go and how it would be received, but I actually found the filming days really boring. honestly, I'm far more interested in the, you know, making it all tick and the strategy and the branding and where do we go next than I am in that sort of thing. So no, I'm not without ego, but I'm really not that bothered. You've got great people like Robert is such a good presenter, right? Jack Scarlett is so good. Imogen Bowman, yeah, they're so good. You know, for us it's a pleasure. And one of the things we always used to get asked when I first started is how do you grow this business? It's Robert's face, it's Robert's business. How do you make that into something that, you know, you've got, you know, it's got longevity? And I think, you know, we don't get asked that question anymore, which is probably quite a good sign.
Definitely. I don't know if you know, Dan, I'm a little neurodivergent and my mind works in some unexpected ways. And so we were talking about legacy. Legacy led me to death. Death led me to stop burning stuff. Stop burning stuff made me think, oh, I wanted to be cremated when I die because I don't want that memorial thing. Oh, hell, I've now got to go and rework my funeral because of talking to you today. Thanks a bloody bunch.
Honestly, we spoke about this yesterday in a production call. We spoke about doing
an
electric funeral. It was like gallows humor, I think. you know, we know we can get our hands on electric Tesla hearse, so we've thought about we had a thing where we might do a special episode where you know, we would not cremate, we would look at the other alternatives. The person would arrive in an electric hearse, and then we started getting some really, really silly stuff, like you know, Robert saying I'm not quite dead, you know, in Monty Python. we were talking about that literally just yesterday. Anyway, let's hope that's decades away for all of us.
Indeed. Oops. Yes, just the unintended consequences of podcasts. But thank you, Dan. It's been really, really interesting to get to know you a bit. I would never have spent this amount of time with you at any event we ever do because we're both so busy. But bless you for spending the time to share, because I've got an insight into far more of what Everything Electric is about. But I think connected with you as a human being as well. So thank you for that. Really appreciate
that. I would say, you know, thank you very much back to EV Cafe and to everyone in the industry and the people who kind of listen to your channel. And I would be remiss to say one last thing, a little plug, if you like. Everything Electric London coming to XL at the end of March. Energy and transport industry professionals go for free on the first day. That's a really important thing for us as well. Yeah. So we can provide details for your show notes, but I would like to say thank you to EV Cafe and to the wider industry as well.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah. Well, Dan, it genuinely is our pleasure, and we've been privileged, and you know, for the last few years to been working together a little bit and you know, helping to build the commercial vehicle zone, but you know, as a feature within what is a brilliant show that gives everybody an opportunity to experience, be entertained, to energize. I'm just trying to think of ease now. But anyway, but it has genuinely been a real pleasure and a privilege. I have just one question, one favor to ask. Can you talk Jo into doing a podcast? Because she would be brilliant.
I will ask her. She's even more. She likes even being more in the back. In the back.
I know. And,
you know, we've got an amazing team in Bristol and in Surrey. And you know, I should confess, Jo is my wife as well. So I have to be very careful about nepotism here. she is something else. You know, she really is incredible, and she sort of hangs it all. So I make a lot of big promises, and then she's the one who actually delivers them. Let's be honest.
Well, can I let you into a secret? Yeah. I asked Jo first to do the podcast.
Did you?
And she said, well, no, Dan's going to do it. And I went, oh, come on, I want you.
We don't let many people, we're like Elon Musk now. We don't let many people speak for us. We're very, very, even Robert, we have to carefully manage his messaging now. Joe is wonderful. If I've got energy, Joe's insanely.
She is a machine. On the events I've seen her about. Anyway, but listen, Dan, thank you so much. Listen, everybody, get your tickets in for Everything Electric. It's in London at the end of March. This will definitely be out before then. You probably won't have chance to book flights for Sydney, but it is going all around the world. And in case you're listening in Australia, you might have just missed the Everything Electric show unless you got along there. And of course, it is going, I think, Vancouver later this year.
In May, Vancouver in September, Farnborough in October, and then Amsterdam. Yeah. By the time this comes out, you'll know that Amsterdam is going to move into 2025 into a slightly better weather period.
Good idea.
That'll be clear by the time this comes out.
So we've got a wonderful year to look ahead, both from the YouTube channel for Fully Charged and also live events where we can experience all of the products that the manufacturers, be they mainstream, Chinese or American or wherever they're from, they'll all be gathered. Well, as many as care enough will be there. We will get to see and experience them all. Dan Caesar, thank you so much. Follow them on the YouTube channel if you're not already. I don't know if you're not already, what rock have you been under? But you know, connect with them on LinkedIn. Follow Dan on LinkedIn for some, you know, for some regular boosts of energy.
Hate.
Some heat, yes. Dan is the personification of a heat pump. So thank you everybody for listening, and please do check out all of the other podcasts on the channel, the EV Cafe Takeaway. We're on YouTube, Spotify and Apple and all of the places. Listen along to many, many others. But listen, as I'm sure you'll all agree, an amazing innovator, pioneer and collaborator of our industry, bringing everybody together for Everything Electric. Thanks so much, Dan Caesar. Have a great day, everybody.